Welcome to Inside the Draft, a weekly preview of the upcoming NFL Draft with insiders from around the country.
Yes, welcome inside the Draft. You're on Colts.com, the Colts Audio Network. I'm Matt Taylor inside the Indiana Union Construction Industry Radio Studio. It is Thursday. It is the month of March. That means it's draft season. We're about 7 weeks away from the NFL Draft coming up in late April. And each Thursday between now and draft day, round number one, coming up on April 25th, we're going to give you some in-depth draft talk with insiders that cover this thing all over the country. The Colts currently sit with the 15th overall pick. They've got a pick in each round of the upcoming draft as we sit here and talk right now. Seven picks overall, and this year's draft for the Colts certainly looks a lot different than last year. Last year, around this time, all the draft chatter centered around quarterbacks, with the Colts ultimately drafting Anthony Richardson fourth overall. But this year's draft is no less important for the Colts, who look to take the next step and improve upon last year's 9-8 season, narrowly missing out on the playoffs. Our guest today joined us last week at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. Draft analyst Lance Zierlein from NFL.com and the NFL Network joined myself and Jeffrey Gorman on Radio Row. And NFL Draft insider Dane Brugler from The Athletic sat down with Jeffrey and J.J. Stankovitz inside the Indianapolis Convention Center as well. And both men are two of the most dialed-in draft experts in the industry, and we are incredibly excited to bring you both of those interviews on our first weekly installment of the draft series. So we're talking about quarterbacks, how the quarterbacks in this draft class impact the Colts, the depth at wide receiver. How much value can you get at receiver on day two of the draft? What's the ceiling for intriguing prospect Brock Bowers, the versatile tight end coming out of Georgia? Where can the Colts get a difference maker at cornerback potentially, and why the NFL Combine should stay put in Indianapolis after 2025 and beyond? All of those topics are coming up here with Lance and Dane here on Inside the Draft. So without further ado, Lance Zierlein beginning with myself and Jeffrey Gorman at the NFL Combine.
If you're at the NFL Combine, you want to talk to this gentleman. We're talking to Lance Zierlein right now, NFL draft analyst for NFL.com and the NFL Network. Appreciate you being here. How many is this for you?
Probably 13th Combine. It's my 10th in a row.
You learn more each year, or you learn less each year?
You do. I guess you learn a little bit less the more you go on, because you start learning these lessons and there's less to learn. But a lot of times you take what you missed on the year before and you look to correct it in your process the next year. So I'm learning all the time.
Excellent.
You have to.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, give us your take on this. The big story here is, how many quarterbacks are going to end up going in the first round, let alone the first top 10 picks? There's a lot. There's outsiders that are coming up and moving up. We saw that with Jaden Daniels from the season he had at LSU, J.J. McCarthy at Michigan. What's this quarterback class look to you overall so far?
Quarterback's good, but it's kind of incomplete. J.J. McCarthy hasn't played a ton of football. Mm-hmm. And so we still don't know what his best football looks like, which I think makes him intriguing to teams in a way. I think Bo Nix is a guy who had a phenomenal season that people aren't even talking about. You look at his stats, and I don't think people realize he had like 48 touchdowns, nine interceptions, mm-hmm. and then he threw for over 77% completion rate. Now, there was plenty of dink and dunk type throws in there, but he threw with accuracy, he threw with good velocity, he showed poise. You know, he's got 5 years starting experience, which teams aren't going to worry how he's a 24-year-old rookie. They don't care about that. What they care about is he's experienced. So, and you know, and we haven't even gotten to the big three, which would be Drake May and Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams. None of those three guys are going to throw here. Disappoints me a little. I wanted to see just on a personal level. I thought it would have been smart for Drake May to throw here and kind of – because I think there's a chance Jaden Daniels goes ahead of him. I've kind of felt that. My grade is higher with Jaden Daniels over Drake May. I think Drake May's got some things he's got to prove in terms of accuracy, touch. And I know you're not against competition out here, but being accurate, throwing with command, being a guy who's going to be the biggest prospect, the biggest arm, I think it would have really benefited him.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, throwing next to guys like Bo Nix and Penix, who both have live arms, but no one's going to look like Drake May. So I think he's making a little bit of a mistake not throwing, honestly.
I'm just going to stay there real quick, Matt. Caleb Williams, everything that you've seen so far, there's comparisons to Mahomes, which is unfair to that kid, but overall number one, done deal, he's the guy?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he's the best prospect in the draft. I think it's Neighbors and Harrison Jr., the two wide receivers. But Caleb Williams is a good prospect. I don't think he's generational. People throw that word around all the time. And, no, I don't think he's Pat Mahomes, and I think there's a lot of issues on tape he's got to get cleaned up. But
sure. You
project the talent. You project who he's going to be with pro offensive linemen around him, pro prospects around him. And I think Caleb Williams' upside is extremely high, yeah.
Lance Zierlein, you know Chris Ballard really, really well. What's going through his mind when it comes to taking the Colts to the next level? What do you think his biggest mission is going to be starting in this draft?
Well, I think his first mission is taking a picture of me walking in the combine from behind, just snuck me before I got in.
Can you show that to the camera?
Yeah, he's like a sniper. I'm just sitting there walking in the combine, and he took this picture and texted it to me and another scout who's a friend of ours.
What the caption said?
Power move, walking with his, thinks he's important, walking with his phone on his ear.
You got to dial it in,
that kind
man.
Of stuff. So, yeah, but, you know, Chris is in that precarious spot, but it's an exciting spot of, hey, we need to win. You know, we need to get to the playoffs. The owner wants to win, and he knows the deal. But at the same time, you have a young quarterback that didn't get all the experience you wish he did, but he's talented, and, you know, you've got the ability to get stronger with the draft, and you've got some young players who are continuing to come on. Love what Josh Downs did.
Yeah.
Last year, and I think he was much more excited about the offensive line play than the year before. You know, it started to – you just have to get, you know, your corners healthy and the young guys get them caught up to speed. But it's a big year for the Colts. You really need Richardson and you know, to take that big step up.
What's then, hypothetically, the best play for the Colts? With so much top-end talent on offense at the top of the draft, is it drafting the fourth or fifth best playmaker on offense, or maybe the first or second best defensive player at a premium position like corner or defensive end perhaps?
Well, I mean, you know, we get Chris Ballard to draft a corner in the first. That'll be fun. I guess Rock Ya-Sin was the last.
He was the first pick of a draft.
Yeah. He was he in the first or was he a second round?
Pick.
Yeah, Chris just doesn't draft wide receivers and cornerbacks in the first. That's kind of how he learned. He likes to build the fronts. And so what I would do and what he would do might be different. I'll tell you what I would do is I am taking a look at corner. First thing I'm doing at 16, I certainly look at Brock Bowers. I think you can't have enough special playmakers. He's great with the ball in his hands, phenomenal. And I think that gives Anthony Richardson a real safety blanket to be able to dump it off and let Brock go to work. So I'd consider Brock because he's a unique matchup player. And he's going to test well. Ballard's going to like the traits. He doesn't look like a Ballard player when you see him physically. He doesn't have that special body type. But the explosive testing is something Ballard really loves. And then, you know, for me, though, I would look at corner. I think there's some pretty good cornerbacks at 16 or in a trade-back scenario where you could go find an early starter. And with C.J. Stroud in the division now, and, you know, Trevor Lawrence, too, it's a consideration now. You've got to be good at this. But, you know, I know Chris loves building the fronts, and we'll see what happens with Grover. I think Grover will stick, but we'll see. But, you know, for me, I probably go off script a little bit and take a look at a wide receiver or take a look at a cornerback if I'm the Colts. And really, corner for me would be most important for me.
From NFL.com and the NFL Network, we're talking NFL draft analyst Lance Zierlein. Those receivers, boy, oh boy, you got a 15th overall pick. The draft is apparently very heavy in receivers. And you mentioned two guys earlier. I want to stick with you there. You can kind of see in your head where Harrison's going first off the board. You can kind of see in your head. Is that accurate to say where Neighbors is going? Or is there going to be fireworks galore for people to get their hands on these potentially, like Harrison, generational talents?
I don't know. You know, I think you'd be surprised. There's going to be some teams that have Neighbors ahead of Marvin Harrison.
Really?
I say that and people don't believe it.
Why do you say that?
Because I've talked to teams who have Neighbors ahead. And when I wrote him up, Neighbors is going to be faster. He's going to be more explosive. Marvin's not going to work out at all. Marvin's a great prospect. I just think Neighbors is right there. I think they're in their own special category. And so who goes first or second is, to me, irrelevant. But they're both extraordinary talents. Marvin's more polished. I think the higher upside due to his explosiveness is going to be Neighbors and ability to win deep balls. But Roma Dunze is one of the best ball winners you're going to find. You know, 61% of his contested catches he won. That's a great contested catch rate. So it is a deep, but what makes it great is there may be, I think the fireworks will be for the quarterbacks, but there's going to be teams who say, I'm not taking a third or fourth best quarterback. I'm taking the number one player on our board, which is Harrison,
right,
or Neighbors or whoever. And then second, third rounds are going to have great wide receivers who turn into starters. So for me, if I don't get one of the top three, I'm waiting until the second or third round. And I like guys like Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell from Texas, Adonai Mitchell. But I'm waiting. I'm waiting on wide receiver if I don't get one of the top three. So if I'm the Colts and want wide receiver, I'm probably trading back, picking up draft picks, or I am drafting a different position and I'm going – offensive line. The Colts have a second-round pick?
Yeah.
I'm probably taking rather a wide receiver in the second round because there's going to be some difference makers in the second.
Hey, good. Not that big of a drop-off.
This is a, this
not,
a good
not a big drop.
This is a good friend of Chris Ballard and kind of giving us a little bit
of tell him what to
insight.
Do. He never listens, so don't. I wouldn't take anything I say as what's going to happen.
Hey, man, I know you're busy as all get out here. I appreciate you sitting down, taking the time, letting us pick your brain a little bit. Lance Zierlein from the NFL Draft Analyst. So much appreciated. Could do this all day, brother.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Joining us now from the NFL Combine, Dane Brugler from The Athletic. We heard Chris Ballard speak at this Combine about what to expect next year, 15th pick in the upcoming draft. But the message was surrounding Anthony Richardson, the key piece of that offense. How does that, in your eyes, lay out as far as that 15th pick goes and beyond with this wide receiver deep draft?
You're right about that. And I'm convinced until the end of time, wide receiver is going to be a strength of every draft. It's just that's where all the athletes are going, and it seems every year we're seeing these guys go earlier and earlier. There's a good chance we see quarterback, receiver.
Really?
For six picks. There's a very good
chance. Okay, I know two of those receivers. Who's the third?
I think Marvin Harrison Jr., and then Malik Nabers, and then Roma Dunze from Washington. Wouldn't be surprised at all if that's the first six picks. And then when's that fourth receiver go? I think it's going to be Brian Thomas from LSU, who, you know, the other LSU receiver, but he's going to be 6'3 and a half, 207.
17 touchdowns.
He led the FBS, and he's going to run a 4.3. He can run. He's a guy that I expected to be a little more raw when I really dove into the tape this year, this fall. He's got a route tree. You know, he understands some of the nuances of how to play the position. And I was very encouraged by that. I was encouraged by his blocking. One of my favorite plays from this entire year was on the Florida tape when Jaden Daniels broke loose and he's down the field. And Brian Thomas starts from the opposite end of the field, races down 80 yards, and picks off the last blocker or the last pursuit player for that last block to really get Jaden in there. And what receivers are doing that? You know, they're in cruise control. They're not taking off. And not only to have the speed, but the want to do that, that speaks a lot about Brian Thomas. And so these guys, I think they know what you put on tape, that's who you are. Brian Thomas can be very proud about what he put on tape.
Is 15 too high for him?
No, he might not be there at 15.
Because,
again, if we see receivers go 4, 5, 6.
Right.
There's a lot of other teams that could use a receiver. And so I think that, you know, he's a guy that has never had to be the number one, you know, in high school and college. Like, you know, he's never had to be that true number one, but I think he can do it. He has the talent for it. So where that fourth receiver comes off the board will be really interesting. 15 would make sense, though. With the Colts, you think about wanting to surround Anthony Richardson with weapons. And maybe the best way to do that, especially on the perimeter, would be a Brian Thomas.
So what I've just been kind of, you know, reading, listening to your prospects to pros you do with Nate Tice, like it seems like there's kind of the first tier receivers, those three guys you mentioned, Harrison, Nabers, Adunze. And then it's almost like it's Brian Thomas in his own tier at that point. And then it's the
Keon,
you
know, Coleman's?
Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin, whatever your flavor may
right.
be. Is that sort of the right way to think about it right now, or is Thomas closer to that first tier or the third tier?
I think he's closer to that first tier, but I think we also have to remember, too, there's not one consensus board that everybody's working on.
Right.
You know, like, these guys are all different, and, you know, I get questions all the time, like, oh, can Jaden Daniels cement himself as quarterback too? And like, well, maybe for some teams, you know, but that's not how, there's not a consensus board that every team's working off of. They all view these guys differently. You know, I was talking to a scout the other day who had a very, almost the same grade on a guy like Brian Thomas as he did Ricky Pearsall from Florida. You know, like, it's these guys are pretty close together, and this is another good year to need a receiver. If you don't get him in the first round, you feel good about your second round options, your third round options. And to your point, like, there's a lot of diversity in the types of receivers that'll be available. If you're looking for more of your size, your guy that's going to dominate the catch point, okay, Keon Coleman's your guy. If you're looking for more of the slot route runner, then Ladd McConkey's your guy. Field stretcher, okay, Troy Franklin makes sense. So depending on the type of receiver you want, this draft has it, and I think, you know, second round, third round, they're going to be options.
NFL draft analyst from The Athletic does a great job. Let's talk tight ends. The bell of the ball, if you will, on this tight end class is Bowers from Georgia. Yeah. I don't know if there's a big separation from him to the next one, but a lot of Colts fans out there and a lot of people have said it. Bowers is there at 15. It's a possibility. Yeah. What do you like about this young man? What's the upside?
What don't you like, you know? It's his weaknesses are more nitpicks. They really are, both physically and the way he's wired. Like, he is a competitor, and you see it. You can tell in the film, you know, but then you talk to people who back it up, talk about how competitive he is, and it makes sense. And, you know, talking to, like, the Georgia coaching staff, like, it's funny. They were – because he had the ankle injury earlier this year, and Kirby Smart was getting questions from media. Like, you know, do you think he might – get ready for the draft and just kind of opt out. And he just laughed. Have you met Brock? Like, do you know what this guy's all about? And that tightrope ankle surgery, it's like, what, 4 to 6 weeks usually? He missed two games. You know, like, this is just how this guy's wired. And you see it on the film because he is a master of the hidden yards. Most 7-yard catches for most tight ends, he turns into 11 yards, you know, because he's so hard to get on the ground. He's like a running back after the catch. But his speed before the catch, he gets open. He dominates the catch point. It's just he's a different type of tight end because he's, what, 6'2 and a half, 235? We haven't gotten the official measurements on him yet. But you have to have a plan in place because part of what makes him special is the versatility. You can line him up in line. You can line him up out wide, put him in a slot, put him in the backfield, whatever you want to do. But he, in talking to some of the defensive players that are here at the Combine about, hey, well, you know, who's the toughest player you face? A lot of them have mentioned Brock Bowers because of the different ways you have to prepare for him and how that puts stress on your defense. Because one minute he's taking an end around, the other minute he's on the outside running, you know, more of a downfield route, and the next he's running up the seam, and he can just do so many different things. And you have to tap into that. So, you know, Shane Steichen and his offensive staff, you know, making sure that, and obviously that Shane Steichen knows more about offense than I ever will. So he will have a good idea of how to use such a versatile talent. But you have to have that plan in place in order to justify drafting a tight end like Brock Bowers in the top 15.
Is it one of those things, and we talked about this a little bit with Daniel Jeremiah, too, last week, where like, you have to have a plan for Brock Bowers. You can't just be like, oh, he's versatile. He can play the F.
Right.
We'll split him out. You know, maybe we'll have him block a little bit. It's like, if you draft him in the first round, you have to have a, here's a set plan. Here's the focus for him. Is that where some teams go wrong with tight end, where they draft a guy and they're like, yeah, he's a versatile player. Let's roll the ball out. He's going to do just fine.
Oh. Yeah.
And then you fail the guy.
And not even just tight ends. Everybody. It's a lot of, hey, he's good. We'll figure it out later. And I cringe when I hear that, we'll figure it out later.
Right.
Because why not figure it out now? Let's figure it out before we draft the guy. We know he's talented. That's great. But how does he fit specifically within what we want to do? What's our identity? And how does he make us better within that identity? And so understanding that is a key part of it and avoiding mistakes. You know, teams can do a lot to – you know, the draft's ultimately a crapshoot. You know, there's been some really good prospects who have busted. But to minimize that risk, you need to have a plan for whoever you draft. You have to have a plan. Okay, is he going to start from us from day one? When is he realistically going to get on the field? Where do we see him, you know, 3 years from now? Like, all these things have to be the projection part of it. And I think, you know, knowing Chris Ballard the way I do, I have no doubt that's a big part of their process.
I asked this question to Benjamin Solak from The Ringer, who I think does a really good job. He thinks about football in a really different way.
Yeah.
And I asked him about kind of the NFL in general. But I wanted to ask you this about the draft, and specifically with something, you know, you pour all your heart and soul, all your time and energy into it. What's a part of NFL draft groupthink that makes you feel like you're taking crazy pills?
I think some of the discord with Drake May is confusing. You know, like, this is a really good player, and I'm confused where all the question marks are coming from. You know, I understand if you watch the Clemson game, you watch the NC State tape, I get it why, you know, some of these reckless decisions are kind of drive you mad. But, you know, you watch those games and his receivers aren't getting open. They're running lazy routes. His offensive line's not helping him. And he felt like he had to do everything. And so to see people kind of be a little too hard on Drake May about some of these decisions. I'm like, guys, I think you're missing on a really good quarterback. I mean, when you drop a quarterback, he's got a lot of what you look for.
Should he be throwing here?
I mean, ideally, we'd have 100% participation rate. You know, I'm not gonna. It's not gonna be something that's like, oh, I'm not gonna draft him now. But obviously, it's a missed opportunity, is what it is. Because you know, C.J. Stroud, watching him throw last year, it's the best throwing session I ever saw.
Was it?
And I've come in here, Cam Newton, 2011. That was my first year at the combine. And Cam Newton was probably the worst that I saw throw. And he still went number one overall. But, yeah, CJ last year was the best I've ever seen. I would have loved to see him throw. But at the same time, I know what he can do with his arm. Important for him this week will be interviews, just making sure he crushes those when teams put him on the whiteboard, making sure he shows how smart he is because he's a really bright kid. So the interview process, more than anything, is what's important for these quarterbacks.
From The Athletic, nobody better than Dane Brugler. And I want to talk about the guy that you see in the middle rounds, the freak, if he will, the defender maybe on that guy. Who is that guy out there that he's not a first-round talent, but he could be an all-pro type of guy? Do you have a couple of guys like that?
You know, Andrew Phillips, the corner from Kentucky, I think he's getting overlooked because, again, if you're drafting one of these guys outside the first few rounds, there's something wrong with him.
Sure.
There's something missing.
Exactly.
And a guy like Phillips, he didn't have any interceptions in college. But I watch a tape and I see, and with corners especially, I want guys that are fast and I want guys that are competitive. Those two. If I have those two things, I know I have something to work with. He's got both those things in spades. I mean, he's got the speed, and he will compete his butt off. Reminds me a lot of Roger McCreary from the Titans, who, you know, doesn't have the size, doesn't check that box, but, man, he competes his butt off. And he's their starting nickel. He's a really good player. Andrew Phillips fits that mold. Who else? I mean, the Kansas pass rusher, I think he's Austin Booker. He's a guy that has length. He's got speed. He's just played 500 snaps in college. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just – it's a – really incomplete evaluation, but there's more to him than just what the flashes say and what the measurables say. So, you know, I think he's a guy that should be going higher than where he's currently slotted. You know, a really good player. But, yeah, Yale's got a left tackle this year who I love, Kieran Omageji. He is a guy that is going to be overlooked because he went to the Ivy League. He had a quad tear in October, so he's not going to work out here. There's some things working against him, but for a team that's a little more forward-thinking, long-term thinking, you draft him in wherever you third, fourth round, wherever he ends up going, and I think you know 2-3 years from now you've got a starter because he's got the athleticism you want for, the way he moves, the movement skills. He's really long. He's got a basketball background. Smart kid. So look for that Yale tackle. I think he's a guy we'll be talking about down the road.
Last one I want to ask you here. The Combine, being here in Indianapolis, it'll be here again next year.
Thankfully.
I kind of have this pet theory that if the Combine moves from Indianapolis, you know, coaches, there already are coaching staffs that aren't here, you know, and maybe if you move to L.A., maybe fewer coaches are going. Maybe go to Dallas, fewer coaches go. If one big-time prospect decides, I'm not going to the Combine, could you ever put the toothpaste back in the tube? And would that be more likely to happen if the NFL plucked the Combine from where it should be here in Indianapolis and moved it somewhere else?
Yeah, it's interesting. Honestly, part of me doesn't want to even think about it because it's just I don't want to disrupt things. First of all, I really hope the Combine stays here. I lived in Frisco for 10 years. I'd spent a lot of time at the Star doing stuff with the Cowboys. Love the facility, but I don't want it to move from here. And I don't. Nothing is more equipped. No place is more equipped than here when you factor in everything, not just you know the space and the medical equipment and all that. But, yeah, I think it's an interesting – because I know people are up in arms about Marvin Harrison Jr. not working out and all. I went back to – so I have the 1996 Combine report because I wanted to see if his dad worked out. Uh-huh. And he didn't. He didn't work out at the Combine. But I'm looking up and down this list and all the players that didn't work out that year. This is a thing that has been going on for 30 years.
Right.
Now, if a player came out and said, I'm just not going, that is where it gets tricky because – that player must think he has leverage because the number one and two reasons you come to the combine is the medicals and the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't want to work out, that's one thing. But if you don't come at all, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
Because
Well,
what are you hiding? You know, is there something with your medical stuff? Because you can't draft a guy without medical information.
Right.
The game of football is too physical. You just don't know what happened in their past.
Sure.
He could have started every game in college, but you don't know. There might be something that is going to prevent him from finishing his rookie contract. So you can't draft a player without having that medical info. So if a player decides not to come to the combine, That's an issue. I don't think it'll be a common theme.
Okay.
I think players and agents understand that. You know, like agents are the voice that really guide these decisions. If a player doesn't want to work out, you work around it, you figure it out. I can't see a player deciding, I'm just not going to come at all. No.
Dane Brugler from The Athletic, NFL draft analyst. Last one for me. Appreciate the time, Dane. These quarterbacks, when are you surprised after this first round is done? 4, 5, 6? And my question with that is, are these all legitimate first-round talents in your eyes after the Bo Nixes of the world?
I mean, I have 3 first-round grades with Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jane Daniels, and then J.J. McCarthy. I have a second-round grade. He's one of my top second-round players this year. But
he's going to be a first-rounder, right?
I think he'll be a top 12 pick. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. I think there's too much need. And the question, I think, where do Bo Nix and Michael Penix go? That's what I'm interested to see, because all it takes is one team.
Mm-hmm.
31 teams can believe they're fourth-round picks. All it takes is one team. And, you know, we could see them sneak into that first round, no question about it. I think it's probably more likely we see them go early day two. It's anyone's guess, because, again, all it takes is one team to really like a player. So over under 5 quarterbacks in the first round,
right?
I don't know what I would say. I really don't. It's tough at this point. I probably have a better answer when we get closer to the draft mm-hmm. and get a better feel for how some of these teams are thinking in the first round. But, I'm eager to see him throw tomorrow. It'll be good to see him out there. And good chance for J.J. to go make a statement. With the top 3 guys not throwing, J.J.'s got a real shot to separate himself.
You heard it right there. Best in the business, Dane Brugler, the NFL draft analyst from The Athletic. And follow him on Twitter X at D.P. Brugler. If you like football, again, at D.P. Brugler. Dane, sure appreciate the time. Love talking to you. And we will see you next year here in Indianapolis.
And for years to come. I can't wait.
Yeah, for years to come.
Thanks so much.
Anytime, guys.